Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 87 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Gannell, and alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, Tristan? Once again, it's awesome to share this space with you. I'm super stoked we got.
It should be a great one, man. A young buck. We got Jake Ducey. I'm actually really interested because we do have a lot of kind of older sort of, for an athlete, maybe towards the end of their career or just finishing their career. So it's quite interesting. This guy is 24 years old. I think actually it kind of reminds me a little bit of Rob Whittaker because they're both very, very intelligent guys. You know, they come across as just genuine human beings, and realistically they're making people's lives happier, like Rob in the fact that he's a fighter and he's, you know, giving people inspiration, but Jake's doing it his own way as well.
I'm interested in hearing Jake's story. So guys, if you're unfamiliar with Jake Ducey, I'm super stoked to bring him on, but he's a writer, he's a speaker, he's been mentored under Jack Canfield, he's been published under Penguin Publishing, which is a powerhouse in the writing game. And what I want to see, what I hope to achieve in this interview, is to peel back that onion a little bit and see where the switched on mindset came from at such a young age. Mm. Where did that come from? Because I know, using myself as an example, at 24, I was a goddamn monster, and that's not a good thing.
I was definitely not an adult at 24.
No way!
It just seems that, I don't know, is it? What do you reckon about that? Do you reckon it's just because younger people have more access to more information now, or world of technology is just putting things in front of them so to be a little bit more mature, or is it just maybe we're not reflecting, maybe we're more mature than what we were?
No, I think Jake is an outlier. You know, if you're familiar with Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, it's basically he doesn't fall on that normal spectrum. He's one of these people that obviously was mentored under somebody that was super influential to him at a young age, and that just speeds up that maturation process mentally.
Yeah.
And when you have intent, when you have goals, and when you have focus, things, you'll be on a certain path. The issue with myself, and I don't want to speak for you, but maybe for you as well, and if you're listening at home, I didn't find my intent until I was 30, because I thought I had it through sport. That came to an end at about 23, and then
it's hard. I still don't think I found my true intent.
Yeah,
like I think doing work like I'm doing now in terms of the podcast, like that's probably made me the happiest I have in a long, long time. And it's just like you get your ins and outs, but like you think about your week and you go, you know, when am I happiest in that week? And I go, well, probably when I speak to people and do the podcast, I reckon.
Yeah, learning.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I always look forward to these interviews. I always like simplifying things for myself. What works for me intrinsically, the way I think, is when I'm looking for that path. So if you're listening and you agree with us about, you know, maybe you can't identify your intent, just try simplifying it. What I like telling myself, when I coach, I'm helping people. So I'm not standing behind a title. I don't call myself a PT or even a coach. At the end of the day, when I wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night, I do it with the intent of helping people.
Yeah.
And then with this show, when we reach out to people, when we interview people, when we ask these questions, my intent is to learn. And that's me simplifying it for myself. And that's what works for me. And that it keeps me happy, man.
I think intent's huge, right? Because I think Lewis pointed it out too, you know what I mean? Like providing value and just something for other people before you think about yourself first, you know what I mean? Like, that's pretty strong.
It's huge.
And if you take that approach, I guess you're already on the right mindset and path to actually think positive. And I guess that probably reflects on what you actually do contribute to society or your clients or even your friends and family, I guess.
I'm under the impression as well that how complex our mind is. So we may think that we have everything figured out consciously about what we like and what we want to achieve and what we're doing. I feel there's a subconscious achievement when you help people in a sense of reaching a fulfillment state. Mm. So something that you might not even be intending to go out to do on a daily basis, you might say, all right, I have three sessions here. I'm going to help three clients. I'm going to interview a guy. I'm going to ask questions. All of those things are the action of which will help you be happy. But I also think a deeper level of that fulfillment comes with what you're giving away, what you're putting out there. You're exuding this energy that you're helping people. You're asking for help. You're having an impact on somebody else's day, a stranger, without asking for anything in return. And I think if you could build on that momentum, anybody listening, or start that momentum as simple as you can, it'll have a it'll have a huge effect on you.
Yeah, I think simplicity is huge. I think Jason Ferrugia pretty much summed it up right. Remember when he said, you know, instead of thinking about what's your purpose and all that sort of stuff and overcomplicating things, just go out there and the first person you see, say hello and ask them how they are. It's just something simple.
I read an article this week about the most successful, influential men in the last 10 years, last 20 years. And, you know, it highlighted guys like, you know, Jobs. It highlighted guys like Elon Musk, our boy from Facebook. And what the article was about was they all have a common denominator in how they dress.
Yeah.
They only will wear a black colored shirt and jeans. And the reason for this is it limits the amount of opportunities that you're putting yourself to have to make a choice.
Well, Bezos did that.
When he said, Bezos did tell us
black
that.
He has a black and white t-shirt.
Because
he's a millionaire. He doesn't give. That's just his game.
Well, I don't think it, man, you could look at it that way, but also the article, the intent of the article was about it's simplifying your thought process.
But I agree, you know. Like,
you're limiting those.
I actually think my best t-shirts are my just plain white and black t-shirts.
Oh, you look, yeah. I mean, I love wearing black, and I used to take heat for it, and I like dressing well. I do like dressing up. But if you go, you know, if you look at my wardrobe, I only wear solid colors.
Mm.
I've never liked logos. I've never liked words or brands on my shirt. And I wonder, maybe that's it.
Yeah, I think it might be, man. And I think it was all evolved. Like, I used to like those brands. Now I don't really care. I just like something that I can grab that I know is just trendy and still
speak to you.
You know what I mean? It's still, you know, I don't look like I don't respect myself. You know what I mean? But still, you still look classy enough to fit into a room.
Guys, go to Tristan's Facebook page right now, his regular Facebook page, Tristan Cannell, and look at his profile pic. My man is rocking like a J. Crew spring line with the pastels and the fedora on. He's looking good. I was like, Tristan,
that you need to start the polo.
You need to start dressing like that more often, man. You're looking sharp.
That was a one-off polo event.
Yeah, but I guess there are little strategies or little effective ways to do things on a daily basis that might not sound huge, but can have a long-term effect on your happiness, your success, your creative thinking. I think that's really important too. If you know, I was talking to a young kid. I say young kid, 22-year-old. He's new. He's a new coach in Sydney, and he was struggling with finding ways over this Christmas break to build his business.
Yeah.
You know, he's worried about the money thing. So I had him speak for about 20 minutes. I'm listening. I'm writing things down, and everything that he was coming at me with was how to get new clients, how to promote his brand online, how to get people to know about what he's doing, what he's good at, all of that, like already basically wanting more.
Yeah.
And the feedback I gave him, I learned from the show. I said, look, man, expect less. Take what you already have and create something from that.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Like, instead of the 10 clients that he's got, he should work out ways how he can interact with them better or speak to them more. Maybe take them for a coffee just to say thank you for your business. For, you know, I mean, just little things. Because it costs a lot, a hell of a lot more to get a new client in than to keep the clients that you've got. So
I'm glad you said that. I told a story to that same kid yesterday about when you and I, about, man, it might have been a year now, we had that client luncheon, and we did it outside of our health club in Sydney, and we had one of the local restaurant guys cater it for us. And about 7 of my clients showed up, about 7 or 8 of yours showed up. But every client that showed up there is still with me.
Absolutely.
You know, like, I didn't do it with that intent. But at the time, it was like, all right, what can I do to provide value? Because if I had the money to train these people for free, if I didn't have to charge them, I would do that. I wouldn't do it as much. But I generally find my fulfillment in helping people, especially if they come to me. If they feel I have a skill that they could use.
Absolutely. You're teaching them, you know. They're learning new things from you as well. And it's not just about training. It's also some mindset things that they have to change and some lifestyle factors that just don't go away overnight. And they need accountability and support. So I think it's more than just, I think, especially people new to the industry, they get in that kind of mindset that the only time they interact with a client is just in that session. But it's a lot more than that. It's about kind of building the relationship, being friends. Like, if you can get to a stage where you're friends with your clients, you know you're on the right path.
I didn't come from a business background, but one of my favorite philosophies you taught me, which is a very common business acronym, is CRM, CRMing, Customer Relations Management. And when you told me the importance of that and how to do that and how simple it could be utilizing with my clients on a daily basis – so young coaches listening home, an example of me doing CRMing on a daily basis is just sending a text to individually to most of my clients, good job today, or in the morning if I'm not training a guy, you know, remember to hit the pool. You did great yesterday. Yeah, that sort of thing. It adds a stronger wall, a stronger bond, a bigger level of trust, and also it creates more communication.
Hmm.
And communication is key for progress.
Yeah, especially some people, it's, you know, a little bit fried, and they might think at the end of the session that's it's gone. You know what I mean? But by, you know, that's your sort of role in that relationship as well, is to interact, making sure they're okay, keeping them motivated, and letting them know they're doing okay. Because I think that's huge. Some people don't know they're doing okay.
And that, man, we were on the ride over here. Tristan and I were having a chat. We, like, you know, we're a year into this now. And one of the little side projects I'm working on is having the framework of how did I feel when I first stepped into a fitness club with 35 other coaches that are writing their own checks. So I said I stepped in my first day and I felt alone. Mm. I felt I had no support. I felt, you know, I was either going to sink or swim. And it's important when you feel that way to ask for help, to find the people around you that you could learn from. There was a time in my life where I wouldn't have reached out to a Jake Ducey, or I wouldn't have wanted to talk to a younger guy because my framework was so entangled, I felt I couldn't learn from a younger dude.
Yeah.
But that's totally BS.
Yeah.
Because it's not about the age, it's about the path.
Yeah, maybe that's a question you can ask Steve Maxwell one of the upcoming episodes, because I know that just listening to a few of his episodes that he's been on before, it's just like he is stuck in that mindset that because he's older than us, he's got nothing to learn from us. So it'll be an interesting question you might be able to ask him coming up.
Yeah, Steve, you know, he's an old-timer.
Yeah, he's in his 60s. He's been around for a while. He's done his thing. So I guess, you know, that's his life value. And
I don't know how I'm going to think tomorrow or even 10 years from now, but I know this version of myself right now sitting here talking to you guys is that I need to learn from everybody. There's something that I can learn that I don't know from every person in the room.
Hmm.
And it's up to me to be able to gauge and be able to identify, all right, can I use this, get rid of that one? Okay, this isn't usable. But, man, I never thought about that. I could put that into my... That sort of thing.
Yeah,
and you kind of become a surveyor of life. You kind of look around, and if you're able to, we talk about invisible tool belts, if you're able to see something in someone that maybe is doing bigger things or going for something that you could be inspired by, even if it's small, and you could apply that to your path,
yeah.
I think that's being human, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Isn't that how innovation and creativity and inventions come about?
Yeah, I guess so. And I think you're right. Learning from everyone is key, man. And don't judge a book by its cover.
Like, that's huge. How many
times that, you know, you see someone, they could be struggling in life. That person with a smile, they could be going through depression. That girl over there that is talking to five guys, maybe she's the quietest person ever. You know, you just don't know. You can't judge from someone from just one viewing of someone. You know what I mean? I think that's important.
And that's why I love doing this, man, because that's one thing that you and I, it's getting clearer and clearer for us to, it's our duty now to interview someone like Jake or in the past Evander Holyfield or Gary Vaynerchuk or Grant Cardone and not talk about Gary as a public speaker or Grant as an entrepreneur, but we could talk about that path when nobody knew them. So as nobody knows, you know, the goal shouldn't be fame. It should be finding a way to reach your full potential.
Yeah.
And that path, what we can learn from each other's path, I think is the important part.
I don't think fame, I think it's great, I think, to fulfill your potential and, you know, be in a position to look after your family. I think for me, I think those two are probably the two big things. And, you know, fame doesn't really concern me. Yes, if a show gets big, you have to expect that you do get a little bit of publicity or you get some extra attention. But in terms of being like a Floyd Mayweather or Mike Tyson or a freaking rock star, no, it doesn't really interest me much at all.
I'm 100% invested in my full potential, and I do not shy away from where I want the show to go, where I want to go, as long as the intent stays in the right place. But, you know, optimizing what I could do at the highest level and still provide value.
Yeah,
and that's an everyday learning process.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to chat with Jake about it. I think we'll touch more on it after the show's finished. But in the meantime, guys, just a big shout out for everyone listening out there. We really thank you for your support. It's been brilliant. You keep sending us messages both on our email, info@thevisionboardpodcast.com, and also on Facebook, on our private Facebooks, and also our page, our company page. So, guys, get in touch anytime you want. Leave us quick messages, you know, fan shout outs, who you want to see on the show, anything you want to see change. You know, we're always up for open feedback. So, guys, like I said, really big thank you. And we really appreciate your support, and we hope you're enjoying the show.
We love all the support, man. Like Tristan said, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Johnny Stofko. Follow Tristan Cannell at Tristan Cannell. I actually pulled my phone out. I want to read this message because I woke up Wednesday morning early, and this was on our vision board page. This is to Simon Ferraro, and you know, he writes about this is about the Commando Steve episode.
Yeah.
And I was very vocal about how that was probably at the time my favorite episode. We learned so much from Steve, and he sent us just such a heartfelt message. I'm not going to read it out loud, but Simon, if you're listening, man, we really appreciate it. And guys, if you want to read it, it's on our page. Go to the Vision Board Podcast on Facebook, and you can see Simon share some love with us. And then also Commando Steve, if you're listening, man, he didn't have to, and he responded back. And that's that communication we talk about. And, you know, we really want to appreciate everyone who's supporting everything, and, you know, we'll continue to bring it.
Yeah, definitely. Simon's a big supporter, so thank you, Simon. And also, thank you, Commando Steve.
Do you know Simon? Like, is Simon a friend of yours?
No, he's not.
See, that's where it's getting into now. When we get these messages, at the beginning and up until recently, they would be like our friends.
Yeah.
And now it's like, yo, Tristan, do you know Jeff? Or, no. Johnny, is Simon your boy? Nah, man, these aren't our boys.
So welcome, Simon.
Yeah, dude, welcome, man. Simon, you're a beast, man. Keep training.
Definitely. Guys, remember, pick up your free ebook, so on our homepage and also on our ebook tab. You can get a free abs guide if you want to get that body in shape, whether it's summer, for sports, a bit of core training in there. So it's the core and abs workout that me and Johnny use on a weekly basis. And it's also a bit of a sample meal guide in there. So get that in there. Free download, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com.
And while you're on our page, check out our sponsor, Onnit. Visionboardpodcast.com/Onnit, human optimization brand. They're going to bring you all the best supplements, all the best training gear. They specialize in optimizing your full potential. When you're going through the checkout, use code word vision board to receive 10% off of all of your purchases.
Definitely get them in there, guys. In the meantime, though, let's get to our interview with Jake Juicy. Our special guest is Jake Juicy. Jake is an international recognized keynote speaker and motivator. At 24 years of age, he already has 3 published titles with Penguin Random House, with his titles including Into the Wind, The Purpose Principles, Profit from Happiness. He's also a TEDx speaker while being mentored by the likes of Jack Canfield and John Gray. We welcome Jake Juicy. Jake, my man,
yeah,
welcome.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Jake, like everything Tristan aforementioned, man, that is an
impressive.
It's an impressive resume for a 50-year-old. It's an impressive resume for anyone. I want to start the show off at, so are you currently 24 now?
The secret is I actually am 50.
Okay, you look, yeah, you just
you look amazing, man.
Yeah, it's that Southern California lifestyle, man. It keeps you young.
I'm 25 now, actually.
So age, I mean, you probably get tired of it. Age is nothing to, you know, hang your hat on in regards to doing good or bad things, but it's the intent that I'm interested in. You know, Tristan and myself talk about, you know, when we were in our mid-20s, early 20s, you know, we always knew we wanted to do something. You know, we were, you know, had good people in our circle. It was always the intent. With you, when did this start? When did you realize that you're, you know, you wanted to share and spread, you know, positivity with people at such a young age?
Yeah, well, I think everyone can relate to sitting somewhere where you don't want to be, and you feel like you're like, am I meant for something more? And for me, you know, sometimes that's someone at a job or in traffic or in school. And for me, it was in school as a 19-year-old freshman. I was studying business and economics on a basketball scholarship. I thought, you know, I was a top San Diego basketball recruit, and I thought, you know, I'll go to school, and because I'm good at basketball, that'll allow me to, you know, pass all my business classes, and I'm tall, and people say if you're tall, you can go sell stuff for people. So I thought I'll go sell stuff and sell random things I don't care about. And when I got into school, I was curious. I think I came into college the year after the big financial crisis with the bailouts. And so I wanted to know in economics class why we couldn't audit the Federal Reserve, who prints and controls American money. And it seems like a reasonable question in an economics class.
It does.
And so my teacher basically told me, be quiet. This isn't a creative class. This is a memorize this book and sit down and shut up class. And that was when I realized it wasn't a conducive place to actually help us solve, you know, we're all young, we're all quote unquote young guys here, and young women. I'm sure you have a lot of people that are quote unquote young that are listening, and we're inheriting a lot of big problems, and economically, socially, politically, environmentally. And so to realize that I had to shut up for 4 years so I could get a degree and then hopefully one day be able to find some solutions and be a part of the solution seemed preposterous to me. And I got really I was really angry. I didn't like, what are we doing? And I found a couple, you know, inspirational books, and I thought, you know, maybe I'll go backpacking for a little while. So I actually took a few thousand dollars that I had saved, and I backpacked around, dropped out of college, backpacked around the world. And when I was gone, I realized, you know, this was something that I thought maybe I could start writing my books and doing what I was doing. So it was prompted out of total dissatisfaction and total disengagement. And I realized, hey, you know, there might be an opportunity here. It didn't go so smooth. No one would publish the book, the first book or anything like that. It went on to to do well. But yeah.
How many knockbacks did you get for your book?
Oh, man, a lot. This is a good story. So you guys are Vision Board podcast, right? So you get it. So I take 8x11 pieces of paper, printer paper, and I write, I'm so happy and grateful now that I'm published by, and it's a certain publishing company, we'll call them Dream Blueprint Publishing.
Yeah.
So I have my entire, my wallpaper. I was like, I'm going to take this to such an extreme that my, all my wallpaper, my house will just be covered in Blueprint Publishing.
Yeah.
Over every wall, I go to the, I go sit on the toilet, like it's right in front of it, brush my teeth. There's one there. I tape like hundreds of them. And, somehow found my way to the publisher's house. And I thought for sure they're going to publish it. I told all my friends and like, I'm going to be published by this huge company. And then, they wrote me a letter, like, I don't know, a week later, and they said that they denied my manuscript. So I had to peel off every single one of those papers, like, crying, you know? Mm. And so that was probably the 10th or 12th rejection. And then I realized, you know, no one's really going to publish this. I need to self-publish the book. And that's how I started. And that book ended up, you know, selling a lot of copies, and Penguin Random House eventually picked him up, but a lot for sure.
Yeah,
when, you know, same thing as a musician.
When you dropped out of college and you picked your backpack up, at the time, are you familiar with Alan Watts?
Yeah, I love Alan Watts.
Do you know that piece he has about waiting in society with, you know, the 7-year-old boy who's an artist? He wants to, you know, he wants to paint, but they say go to school, wait till you're in 8th grade, wait. You, that story reminds me of, like, you know, what he was getting across. So it sounds to me did you have like a pretty strong circle of influence supporting this, or was it something that you intrinsically felt that you knew you had to just do when you left?
Something I intrinsically felt. I didn't. My mom thought I was crazy. She was crying. She thought I ruined my life. My parents were divorced, and my dad had told me, you know, go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that I just felt this thing. Like, it's funny that we don't really, I think stoicism, right, talks a lot about really looking objectively at the worst case scenario. And I looked what's the worst that could happen? The worst that could happen is I have fun and I go back to school in six or 12 months. You know, the worst that could happen for a lot of us is we go back to the same job in 3 months or 6 months. And I think that I just looked at the worst and I said, hey, you know, it's just something that I have to do.
Yeah.
It's actually funny you bring that up, because I was just out at dinner last night with a couple of friends, and one of them was just starting a business, and he was a little bit scared about starting the business. But then when we broke it down, I said to him, what's the worst that can actually happen? And we broke it down. It was, the worst that could happen is he has zero money and he goes back and lives with his parents. And we go, well, that's a pretty good incentive to actually go out and do it, man, because that's not a bad thing to actually end up on.
It's like Joseph Campbell, man. If you're falling, dive. You have to take that action, man. So many people just hold, you know, sell themselves short with the idea of fear of just making a step, when not realizing that it's that step that's the biggest, you know, the most important part.
Yeah. Where did that 6 months that you took on the backpacking, where did you actually go?
I started in Guatemala, and then I actually went into Australia.
Yeah.
I hitchhiked through Australia, and I went to...
You hitchhiked, so you had your thumb
Bali.
Out, and...
Yeah. Just like that. And then I went through Indonesia, and I went through Thailand. And then, I was going to go for over, part of me is like, maybe I'll never come back, or I'll just go you know, I don't know.
Alexander Supertramp.
Yeah, right. And then what, you know, what happened was, you know, I thought I was going to find something or get to the get a sign or find something that, you know, I was looking for. And I actually had a really bad spill when I was hiking in Indonesia and saw my life flash before my eyes and some locals saved me. Wow. And I realized that I was traveling around the world looking for something that I hoped that I would find, this thing out in the world. And that's what we do. A lot of times, you know, people that are on their own self-discovery pursuit, maybe they leave a corporate job because they don't want to climb the ladder of, you know, when I get there. But then we apply the same thing in our own self-discovery. Once I travel, then I'll find my purpose. Once I start my podcast, then I can make a difference. Once I.
Yeah.
And I had that same philosophy, and I realized, man, I'm traveling around the world looking for something, and everything I need is right here. And if I died when I fell, I would have been, that would have sucked because I had all these things that I wanted to do and this fear I was scared of coming back and writing the book. And that's what prompted me to come home early and start on, you know, what I'm doing now.
Could you share with our audience and the people listening what you achieved with the purpose principle, like what your main, you know, push is with your intent getting across to the people with that work?
I don't know how severe it is in Australia, but in America, it's pretty severe where people think that you have to sacrifice being connected to yourself in order to be successful. But that's clearly not working because 75% of Americans are actively disengaged from their jobs, which is a politically correct way to say I hate what I do.
Yeah.
But we're not making money at it either, because 9 out of 10 people are dying with less than $10,000 and no financial assets. Most people are dying broke, pursuing this idealized notion that if they do things they don't want to do for their whole life, they'll make money. But no one's making money that way except for the people that run the large companies. Mm. And so Purpose Principles was about examining and using examples and anecdotes of some of today's most influential people who are all using common principles to create success at the things that they actually care about and contribution at the things that they actually care about. Having that sense of vision and purpose at something you've chosen, as opposed to living out of default, is what the book centered around.
How long did that book take you to write?
Not that long. You know, I write. It's always a funny subject to me. So I write above the screen when I write. So I don't look at the screen when I write, and so it allows me to write faster and get my thoughts out because I don't look at what I type and say, no, that's not good. And then I erase it again. No. And people will stay on the same page for 2 months.
Yeah.
I can get a whole book out in a couple months because I just try and get the first stream of thought out. Then I'll read back through and I'll piece it together thereafter. So, you know, probably a couple months is generally how long it takes. Yeah. And it's just because I don't question my thoughts. I just like, I can erase it later. Just let's get it out for now.
Yeah.
You know,
that expression. Are you currently writing anything right now?
I'm not writing anything right now. I had a book come out, in June called, Profit from Happiness. And so right now I've been running a lot of events, my own conferences and kind of working on some of my other aspects, some online courses and some different things like that right now. I haven't felt called to writing anything.
Yeah, with public speaking, was that something you've always been comfortable with, Jake? Or is it something kind of you just worked up to, man?
No, I was so bad. I said to, I have my girlfriend who you guys met, introduced me at my last event.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, I just don't think that I'm naturally good at it. And I said, I wish you would have seen my first talk. You know, I had an idealized notion that, like, you just put a book out and then it sells. You don't do anything. I can just, like, hang out on my couch. It'll just sell. That's the way it works. And then I was like, well, you're faced with a very stark reality that you have to be your own, you know, voice for it. And that's how I picked up public speaking, was just a lot of talks. A lot of times nobody came. Mm. And then that, you know, grew over time.
Yeah. Where was your path at? Like, how far along in terms of, you know, this author, writing, public speaking career, where are you at when you did the TED Talks?
So that was Into the Wind was the first book. So that book was self-published. I filled the car up with books. So we went door to door, knocked on door to door sales, farmers markets. I spoke at open mics at coffee shops, stuff like that. Like I was in that phase, and I don't know how how it works when you really step into things,
Yeah.
Things conspire and somebody found it.
What was the process like? Because the TED Talks thing I'm very interested in, how does that system work with getting it, I guess, broadcasted? Did you have to apply? Did you have to promote? Did they come out? Did they reach out to you?
They found me. They contacted me. I honestly, it wasn't even something I had in my thought process, and it came to me. And I know that... there's a lot of people that go out and apply and that works great for them, but I definitely also, I think there's I trust the process of things, and I was really at the early stages of it. I didn't know, I was just trying to sell 10 books in a day, basically. And then the opportunity presented itself. So, I mean, I know a lot of people apply and have great success with it, but somebody had told them about the work I was doing or something.
Yeah. What about the latest book? So the latest book is The Profit from Happiness. So what is the actual book about, and what was the intent behind this one?
Well, I gave a speech at this really big company and a really big American company. And it was funny because I go for a tour before of their big, huge facility. And so when I walk in, we do the whole tour, and then they're showing me around, and the woman that booked me is like, "And that over there, that guy is the reason that you're here." And she kind of says it all quietly. And I, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, we're having a lot of, he's a big team manager, tons of people below him, but no one can work for him. But he's also our MVP. And I was kind of struck by it because it's this guy, they're paying me to come to their facility because this guy's causing all these problems, but then they're publicly awarding him all of the MVP and all of these things because he could sit at his desk and work, block everyone out, but he was not a team player.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really weird. I just was like, that's kind of weird. Like, why are you, you're publicly incentivizing this guy that people want to quit because of him. And so it kind of went me down this rabbit hole of looking into, we have this thing where we think, and it kind of goes back to what I said earlier, if we sacrifice connection to ourselves and to others, we'll be more productive. Well, Harvard has actually done studies where they've shown that the more engaged and connected you are to those around you, the more productive you are. And so it's actually reverse of what we think, but it's causing all these problems. So the book is about really practical everyday ways to be a leader, no matter what level, in a team or in an environment or any type of commercial or non-commercial culture we're in. So it's a very holistic approach to building ourselves and other people up.
Yeah, you brought up the
word. I think it's a neat.
Yeah, that's a very, the idea also about the guy getting praise for, basically someone like you being an outsider walking in and identifying that's really not, those aren't healthy leadership qualities. And Tristan and I talk about leadership a lot. I used to work for a leadership and development company. If you had to state in one sentence, what would being a great leader, what is that like in the mind of Jake Ducey?
I think making other people feel seen and appreciated, because when people feel seen and appreciated, they trust their ideas, right? They go out and they lift other people up. And I think that's all where it begins, right? Like, what's a problem? Like, the Lakers. Remember the Lakers? I don't know what Australian sports are, but the Los Angeles Lakers at one time, it was Kobe, Shaq, Karl Malone, Gary Payton, Derek Fisher, like a team of Hall of Famers. And then they lost to the Pistons. And it was because they didn't, everyone was
out. That chemistry
out,
wasn't there, was it?
No one felt seen or heard by the other people. That caused Shaq to leave, No one felt seen or heard by anyone. And so I think that's the core. The Pistons, everyone moved the ball. Everyone felt seen and heard. And it created a cohesive unit. And I think that's at the core. Now, I'd back that up by saying, I gave a speech one time, and I met Martin Luther King's lawyer, Marion Edelman Wright.
Okay.
So, and I actually ended up spending the afternoon with her after the speech, just her and I. And I asked her, I said, you know, what made, this is a woman who spent a lot of time with one of, arguably one of the greatest leaders who's ever walked the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And he got millions of people in for a common goal. And I said, what made Martin Martin? And I'm expecting her to be like, his booming, charismatic voice, you know. But she said he listened. And I was like, come on, say something interesting. That wasn't interesting. So she's like, no, seriously, he listened. The reason that people trusted him and would die when he said, let's go here, and people were like, well, we might get hurt, and people ended up dying or getting a, whatever would happen with police and officers. She said it was because people were willing to put their life on the line because he would sit in the meetings. And he wouldn't talk, so he wouldn't tell people what to do. He would say, what do you think? And he would go around the room, and she said he would spend 2-3 hours where he wouldn't say a word. He would just take in everyone's thing. So people felt this commitment and dedication to whatever he ultimately decided. And I thought that was really interesting, that that was what she said, why he was such a great leader, because Martin Luther King didn't invent the civil rights movement. It was already happening, and he kind of swept up on the wave and organized it. And it was because, and there was a lot of other great leaders too. And it was because of his approach to bringing everyone in inclusively, you know, according to her, according to someone that was his lawyer and spent a lot of time in those private meetings. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, one of the top phrases that I kept with this company in Vegas I work for, Rapport. The number one rule of leadership was always the best leaders lead with their ears. So it sounds to me they probably had some type of understanding of Martin's strengths, you know, which is...
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Hey guys, hope you're enjoying the episode with Jake Ducey. There's a lot of other content we think that you might enjoy. Please check out our episodes with the likes of Gary Vaynerchuk and also Grant Cardone, but there's plenty of variety for everyone. So if you haven't yet, please subscribe to the Vision Board podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and please leave us a 5-star review. Now back to the show.
What about, talk to us a little bit about the mentoring with Jack Canfield. I'm really interested in that side of things, man.
I've definitely been really blessed to have some really, you know, people that are, you know, top in my field, our field, that I've learned from. I met him. He has this audio program called Dare to Win. Yeah. You know, you probably, as listeners, listen to these awesome guys, and you might actually be listening. I've heard this phrase before. I think it's really cool. Entertainment through insight. We listen to everything, and we say, well, I'm listening, but we're not applying. Yeah. And I was listening to one of his programs, and he said, write down your top 101 goals. And I'm like, all right, I've never done it before. All right, I'll write down my goals, you know. And so number 9 is to meet, be endorsed by, and mentored by Jack Canfield. And I just decided I'd play the game, you know. So I invite everyone who's listening, you know, just play the game, you know, just play the game. So time passes on. I kind of forget about it. This is when I was 20. So this is when the first self-published book was about to come out. And I eventually get a call from my speaking coach, and she says, hey, Jack Canfield is going to be emceeing this event. Why don't you come out, and why don't you, you know, try and meet him? So, you know, it was one of those events where you buy the ticket online and it's a banquet. So it was a charity cause. So then at the same time, you also decide what plate of food you want. And then they're going to serve it all to us at some point during the night. So I do all that, pick it all in advance, get my book, and I sign it to him, to Jack, like whatever I said to him. And I drove the 2.5 hours to the event. And as soon as I showed up, I realized two things. And the first was that you're not dressed up in a formal situation when you have a thrift shop plaid suit and like some old wrinkly jeans. It's not dressed up. That one and edgy. Then the second thing that I learned was it's hard to build rapport. And when there's 600 people there, right? So there's 600 people there. This guy's the MC, so he's the quote-unquote famous person. So everyone's lying to do photos with him. And so I realized, like, damn, I might not even get a chance to even, you know, introduce myself the way that I want, spend the time with them that I wanted. And the whole night goes on, and he's emceeing. And then every time there's a break, there's these huge picture lines. And then the night's kind of coming to a close, and I'm up on the top level. There's two levels, like up all these stairs, and it's this little circular table, five or six people. And Jack says, hey, we're going to serve dinner here in the next 30 minutes, and you know, we'll have the night come into a close here. And I'm like, okay, this is my last chance. So I start just like walking down the stairs, and he's coming to his seat, but then someone stands up and like grabs his attention. So, you know, I'm standing there all awkward when you're like trying to see what someone's doing. I'm looking over my shoulder, like pretending I'm doing something. And eventually he goes to sit down, and I walked over and I introduced myself. And, you know, I was definitely just really a kid at that point. And I said, hey, Jack, my name's Jake Ducey. You inspired me to write this book. And I handed him the book, and he probably heard that like hundreds of times that night. So he said his first response, the first words out of his mouth were say, how did I inspire you? And I said, you know, in your book, you said, when someone says no, you, and I just started quoting him, when someone says no, you say next, and SWSW. And he's just like laughs at me, and he said, you should meet my wife. And he hands the book to his wife. It turns out his wife, my mom, went to high school together. So we're just like talking, you know, and the time kind of just passes by. And then I noticed the waiter come out to put the food, you know, that we ordered when we got the tickets down at the table. And I don't want to be that one that's just like the nuisance while he's eating. Like, and what about this? What about, you know? So I'm like kind of trying to wrap up, to turn back around. And I'm just like, all right, Jack, thank you. And I turn to leave, and he says, hey, are you going to eat that? And I was so wrapped up in the moment, I didn't realize that out of this 500 people, no empty seats, the seat to the left of the guy who's emceeing the event is empty. The guy sitting next to him left just when dinner was announced. And so the waiter didn't know, so the waiter put food on the table in that very seat. So I sat down, and that's how we built the connection. Now, the crazy thing, this was a really eye-opening thing for me. So think about all the weird parts that move. So I write this goal down. Right. And people say when you set an intention, it's seeking into your subconscious mind, your unconscious mind. So think about all the unconscious things that happen. This whole event happens. I never get the real impulse to act on, to go up and introduce myself till the end. Little do I know, the waiters behind the scenes going to his table, they could have went to the table next door. And I got the urge, if I was 5 minutes later, someone else probably would have got that seat. And I go and talk to him, and the waiter comes at the exact moment and puts the food at that empty seat. And that was like this weird aha moment for me, where I was like, wow, there is this really amazing power when you can channel the energies of your unconscious mind towards a means that you want. Yeah. And so it was a really eye-opening thing for me, and that's how we met.
That's an amazing story. I love stories like that when you get to share them. And are you familiar with synchronicity? Have you read about it? What it is, and like examples of moments of synchronicity, being synchronized.
Oh, yeah. The energy. Yeah, I mean, I have those all the time for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you're talking. You know, a little example would be you're talking to your girlfriend, and you know, about an actor, and then the next day it's an actor that's not even famous. You turn the TV on and that movie's on. You're like, oh, we were just talking about that. And to the deeper level, the deeper perspective of that is like a story like yours of being able to tap in and tune into it and be aware of it. And like almost create opportunities through it, as long as that energy is with positive intent. It's something I've been reading a lot about lately. It's an interesting story. Have you heard of Seligman? He wrote a book called The Character Strengths.
I've never heard of that book. No, or the author.
Yeah, it was given to Tristan and I by a, you know, one of our questions is we ask our guests. He's a famous Australian coach, and he brought the book up and he was sharing it with us. And my question for you is, if somebody were to ask you, Jake, what do you feel, you know, are your strongest character strengths? What would you tell them?
My strongest character strengths are probably consistency, and also my girlfriend's looking at me. She says integrity and patience. That's what she
said. Those are good ones. those are the right ones.
That's good.
Also, knowledge of the subconscious and unconscious mind. Mm. I can't tell you how many amazing opportunities that I get out of nowhere, and they aren't because of luck. It's because I understand how the unconscious mind works, how fear works in the brain, and I program my desire. I have a hypnosis I recorded in my own voice that I listen to every single morning. I have the same statements I write every single day for, you know, hundreds of times a day. I program myself for the things that I want and allow that to seep into my unconscious mind. I don't know how I would describe that as a character trait, but it's something that's really aided me in my life.
Yeah, awareness for sure.
I'm actually interested in your day-to-day, kind of give us a bit of insights into how it is, because you just brought up what you did in kind of the morning. Are you also doing things like meditation? Are you working out? Are you reading? Can you just give a little bit of insights into that, Jay?
Yeah, usually what do Ashley and I do? So we wake, you know, we're up in LA right now, so I slept in today, but usually alarm goes off at 5. And within 10 minutes, I just chug some water real quick and I listen to a hypnosis, 35-minute hypnosis that I listen to. That shuts off and I usually stay for another 20, 35 minutes, breathe. Excuse me. So it's like an hour long meditation, half of which is guided, half of which is to my own direction. And then after that, I write my statements out, my same statements of my goals over and over again. I write them in present tense to program my subconscious with repetition. I read my statement on the fridge every single morning on my vision for my life out loud. I read it out loud. And then usually we go straight over to 24-hour fitness, usually in the gym, probably within 2 hours or so. And those are kind of like my bread. Those are kind of like my bread and butter. Usually get a meditation in the afternoon without the hypnosis, just like a quiet one. And those are pretty much my grounding core things: is my statements that I write, my ones that I read, and then my hypnosis and meditation, and then us going to the gym, and that's about it for us. Yeah.
Is it difficult for you and Ashley to find like-minded, you know, people your age to hang out with? Do you find that harder, or is it easier? Do those people come to you?
See, I'm not as attached to age. You know, I was talking to this young man recently, and he's in a similar pursuit as us, and he was, you know, kind of having trouble launching his stuff off the ground. He said to me, now I realize I need to spend more people with my age. And I didn't challenge that thought, but I think it's a silly thought, because in 3 more years, you're going to be a little bit, why don't you spend time with people that have the same values as you rather than have the same age as you? Yeah. Age is just it's an illusion. It's just a construct. And I think that I don't have any problem with that. I you know, a lot of my best friends are older than me, but there's no concept of them being older. One of my best friends, when we first met, he's over 10 years older than me. And I thought he was my age. I didn't know till like the second or third time we had hung out. I was like, dude, how old are you? 35. What? You're 35 years old. And so that's a good have that problem. And I also just trust that the right people, you know, regardless of how old or how young, and I have young friends younger than me too. You know, for me, it's more about if the values align. If I'm inspired by them, it doesn't mean they need to be more successful than me to be inspired. I'm inspired just by people, you know, stepping into their values and their dreams. No matter where you are in life, right? That's what's inspiring.
Yeah. How would you state success then? We talk about that a lot. Tristan had a really good blog on it about identifying each, you know, perspective is a beautiful thing. What does success mean to you?
Earl Nightingale has a quote. He says, success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal, meaning success is constant progress on what your vision for your life is. And I'd say that makes me feel on purpose and on success is my vision that I read every single morning, my vision that I've internalized and have imagined. And Henry David Thoreau says it another way. He says, to move confidently in the direction of your dream. So I'd say that, and that tunes into not obtaining. It's not the attainment of something. It's being in process over outcome. Abraham Maslow talks about self-actualized people, and self-actualized people, he has 3 steps to it. And the second step is they're in process over outcome. So I think that it's doing the things, doing the core consistent things that are moving me and create and further sculpting me into who I want to be. Now, that doesn't mean tasks every day, like doing interviews and doing this and doing a speech. Sometimes it's just, you know, waking up, doing my meditation and taking it easy, which today has been, is, you know, so to me, it's that progressive realization of that vision. And of course, you know, feeling joyful and free in the process of that is how I would look at it in my own life.
Yeah. Jake, I'm intrigued now, man. You use that word vision a lot. So I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit. Give me a couple things on your vision board, man.
Couple things on my vision board. I already have it. See, I believe that my images that I have in my mind are already real. It's just that they take a little bit of time to materialize in third dimension. See, we only see a little bit of visible light, right? You only see a little bit of visible light. You only hear a little bit of sound. Dogs can hear more sound than us. There's certain animals that can see more visible light than us. Mm. So my thought is, how could this reality be ultimate reality if I can only see a little bit of light? There's a lot more happening beyond what I can see. And, you know, when you really break it down, this world isn't even solid. It's just energy. It's just vibration. And so what I believe is all the things in my imagination are already real. I just have to align my nervous system with them. And then I become a channel for them. Now, one of the things that I'm a channel for in my life is, 5-acre fully sustainable farm, pool, jacuzzi, ocean, salt water, spa, no, steam room, sauna, beautiful views of nature. And that's Ashley, my girlfriend, and I's farm. It's going to have solar panels, Tesla battery, epic, huge gardens on it. It's going to it's going to have my chicken coops. It's going to have everything. It's just going to be this epic, fully sustainable retreat. So that's one thing that we are bringing to life.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah. What's some other things? 2017. You know, I want my company. I want a next step is I'm bringing on 2 new employees at the start of this at the start of 2017. So goal is to grow $1 million revenue in 2017. So, you know, building the team with all of that. Those are kind of the, you know, and then it's just creating more of what I already have, getting new levels to my health, getting new levels to my connection to myself and my spirituality and something greater than myself. You know, things like that.
Yeah. Jake, Tristan and I are both, we also coach, and coaching is an awesome platform for us to learn, give feedback, also, like, you know, understand from lessons. 2016, if you had to look back, could you share with us maybe one, if you had to pick one, an important lesson you learned that you feel that is going to allow you to take on 2017 with open arms and just dominate?
Yeah, patience.
I have it tatted on my arm right there.
You do?
Yeah, right there. Epic. My first tattoo, I was 18 years old. 16 years ago was patience right there. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, patience, man. You know, I think that, you know, we live in an instant gratification culture, so we're conditioned to want things really fast, and if we don't get them, something must be wrong. And so I think recognizing, like, this isn't even a one-year vision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I know you guys are the same. I'm sure you guys, even if it's not clearly defined, this is what you're going to do for the rest of your life. This is a 40, 50, 60 year vision. Bob Proctor, who's, you know, someone that I've gotten to know real well, big inspiration to me. He's 82. He's been doing it for 56 years.
Yeah.
So the idea of the years of failure because I don't reach a goal or something is the stupidest idea, because it's so much larger than what could happen in 12 months. So I think patience is a big one. And then when I really grasp, which I am more and more, it's what I'm really fascinated by, when I really grasp on a deeper and deeper level that everything is a result of unconscious programming, 20, 17 is the year where deeper than ever, I'm programming, I'm reconditioning my subconscious mind, I'm reconditioning my nervous system so that I act in new ways, see new things that weren't there before, have new 65,000 thoughts. That's what psychologists say that the human mind has every day. Mm. You, me, all three of us each have about 65,000 thoughts. Now, imagine how many of those thoughts are actually aligned with our vision. Psychologists tell us 5% of our life is conscious. Only 5. That means 95% of our life is unconscious. Unconscious thoughts, unconscious reactions, unconscious behaviors. We're living our lives out of old behaviors and autopilots. And the more that I've understood how that works, the more seriously I take the idea of programming myself. Like, part of me is like, it's more, to me, I'm like, if I can only do a couple things in a day, it might not even be doing like daily grind tasks. It'd probably be doing my hypnosis and my meditation and like my work like that. So those are my two things, patience and programming myself on a deeper level. And that opens up things and bring things to me that I didn't see before.
Yeah. Jack, you've been brilliant today. Unfortunately, we've run out of time again. Like,
yeah,
it's one of those interviews, like, we've said that the last two interviews we've had,
we could have done a series.
We run out of time, and then we look up, and it's been 45 minutes, and we go, wow, we've been speaking for 45 minutes, because it's just positive, and it's like, it's great just to actually chat with you and
get
some really, you know, solid and just deep,
very insightful stuff, man. Like, time is like the one commodity we don't get back, and we really appreciate you taking the time, sharing the space with us. I'm connecting with our listeners and fan base in Australia, and man, we're really looking forward to when you do make it down here, man. Definitely,
we're gonna have to definitely
organize something. You know, I already see it. I already have a lot of thoughts. I'll message you.
We've envisioned it. Yeah. But before we let you go, Jake, we've got one personality question, my man. Now, Jake Ducey, you're gonna be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. It just can't be anyone, family or friend. So Ashley cannot come. And it can be anyone dead or alive, my man. Who are you inviting?
Bob Marley. Got his shirt on right now.
Yeah.
Bob Marley is so inspiring. Dude was shot, and a bullet went into his arm, and he went and performed his concert the next night. And the reporter said, you could have died. And he said, my life is for the people, and if I can't live for the people, I don't want to live. Yeah. You know, that's ultimate connection to a vision. So Bob Marley would be number one. Number two would be probably Elon Musk.
Yep.
Number two, they asked him, you know, he's going to beat NASA to land on Mars before NASA. And they were like, how'd you learn how to land rockets and fly rockets? He said, I read a lot of books.
Yeah.
That's what he said. I read a lot of books.
He created the fifth mode of transportation. And he said, right, you know, with the Hyperloop. And he's like, you know, I just wanted humans to be more efficient. Like, so create a new form of... Dude, the guy is amazing. It's an excellent one. That would probably be in my top 5 for sure.
Number 3 would be... Jim Morrison. I'd love to meet Jim Morrison.
Yeah, cool.
Number 4 would be... who else do I really... Ralph Waldo Emerson would be there for sure. Ralph Waldo Emerson's an interesting cat for sure. And probably Henry David Thoreau. I'd want them at the table together because Henry David Thoreau refused to pay income taxes to the government for genociding the Native Americans and went to prison. And Ralph Waldo Emerson, these are, you know, two very, very, very famous philosophers. And Ralph Waldo Emerson tried to bail him out. And Henry David Thoreau was like, don't give your money to them. I'll stay in jail. And what I think is, not the situation of which they did it, but how much they connected to their values. Mm. This is something they believed in, standing for a certain level of integrity and nonconformity when they felt it was the right thing. So I'm inspired by them in that regard. So I'd say that vibe, that'd be interesting. Be interesting dinner.
Emerson has probably one of my favorite quotes, "This too shall pass." It's simple. It just puts you in the right framework when you're struggling with certain, you know, things that may seem heavy, but really aren't.
Definitely.
Can I tell you my favorite Emerson quote?
Of course.
Go for it, man.
Whoso must be a man must also be a nonconformist.
Yeah, nice. Man. That's awesome. That reminds me.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah, that in the early 2000s when I'm going to Green Day, the menorah, they had a lyric similar to that. I want to be the minority. Anyway, yeah, that's a different. That's
loves his music.
I used to play music, man. Long Beach, dude. We were in. I was in a reggae band. I moved here with my hair down like as long as yours. Three years ago.
We got two more questions. How long did that hair take to grow?
Three years for sure. Actually. It's about 3 years, right?
3 years. Yeah, you're right. About three. I've trimmed it, obviously, but about three from like buzz length here.
I had to conform, man. Like working in Sydney in the CBD, I'd never been in that environment. Everyone's walking in suits and my hair's down to here, man, and I got defeated. But I'm growing it again, so. Yeah, Jake, man. Thanks a lot for your time, buddy.
And Jake, where can the people find you online and on social media, my man?
Yeah. I mean, if you guys are on Vision Board Podcast website, my name will be there, but it's Ducey, D as in David, U-C-E-Y is my last name. So JakeDucey.com on Facebook, on Instagram, and also YouTube, all that stuff. And also thanks to whoever it was that originally how Johnny found me.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this, there was someone in Australia that posted about my book, How Johnny Found Me. So if that's you, hit us up and let us know. Thank you for the love.
That'd be a cool connection, actually.
Yeah, I have to go. Yeah, I'm sure I could do some research and figure that out for you.
There you go.
Jake, you've been brilliant.
Guys, I appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
You've been brilliant, man. Let's hopefully get you on again
and keep us posted.
2017, and we'll see what you're up to, man.
Keep us posted on the Australian trip, too.
Yeah, we're doing it, for sure.
All right, buddy.
Definitely. Regards to Ashley, too, buddy.
Yeah.
All the best.
Cool. Thanks, you guys.
Peace. See you, guys. Jake Ducey.
Yeah, that's awesome to get a guy on. You know, we shared with the story in the episode with him about how I first heard of him.
Mm.
And then also being able to interview him with the live Skype video.
Yeah, nice stream there. He's
how about his energy?
Energy, smile. Smile. Great smile.
Yeah, he has such a kind natured spirit, what I took from him. And then also his willingness to learn and then also give back and share. Like the story about, for instance, the Jack Canfield story.
Yeah.
I mean, one way or another, I think we all have a similar story. You know your path is becoming aligned. You know spiritual people will call it synchronicity when things become synchronized, when things like that start happening.
Yeah, Jack, it'll be interesting because we've got hopefully in the first quarter we'll hopefully have Jack on, and then we can kind of flip it and see how the relationship worked on his end as well. Because I think for someone like Jack Canfield, who is, I think he might be in his 50s.
Jack's older than that.
He's done it all.
Yeah, I think Jack's older than that.
Done it all in the business world. Like sometimes having someone like Jake come through, someone that can bring energy.
New energy, kind of can revigor.
And maybe he sees some things of himself in Jake that he wants to pass down and sees the same as charismatic. It could happen. So interesting to see his perspective for someone that's done it all pretty much.
Yeah, like you go to a 25-year-old, five dinner party guys: Marley, Elon Musk, Jim Morrison, Emerson, and Thoreau. You know, I wonder what mine would have been at 25. You know, have you ever thought of that? Like, we ask this question to every guest. At 25, mine would have probably been like, here's my answer. It would have been like, I ain't talking to you. I don't care about that. You know what I mean?
Some 25-year-olds now might have Justin Bieber on there. Some are more mature and have answers like Jay.
Emerson, Thoreau. You see the kid's hair is down to his shoulders, blonde, but he has an old spirit. Like he has this willingness to learn, and
I think he's open to learn but open to share. I think that's what makes him so
the purpose, so principles, man. That was my biggest point of wanting to talk to him about, finding out the intent for wanting that to make your life's mission. And initially, if you looked at his social media pages, I'm speaking rhetorically. I'm not saying look at him, but if on paper, if you see a 25-year-old best-selling author, good-looking from Southern California with long blonde hair, you might paint a different picture. If you just judge a man by his picture, and, oh, he's from LA, he just wants to be famous, blah, 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 not the case.
No, not at all.
And I think that, you know, it's awesome to see a dude where he could easily be out partying, he could easily be making the wrong choices, surrounding himself with the wrong people. But choosing to go this route, I think, is pretty phenomenal.
No, it's cool, man. And he's doing some great things in LA. Like, when you think, he's had 3 published books, man.
Yeah, the youngest published author in Penguin. I think that I love stats like that. I know some people are like, stats don't mean shit, blah, blah. I like stats like that because it
he set his own trend.
First, you can't, anybody who's ever had a goal would never have that goal if somebody didn't do something.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if Michael Jordan never won 6 rings, and never lost the finals, You know, there's a 12-year-old, like, you know, LeBron. Maybe this is a bad comparison, but
it's good there's, comparison
a stat,
because
there's a stat MJ has. MJ played in 6 finals and he won 6 rings. That's perfection.
Yeah.
That's a good – I love that stat. And if he had never done that, there wouldn't be that stat. So you
that's
know,
his own.
Maybe
right.
LeBron with just 3 rings would be, or you know, because you had Bill, you had guys who won more rings. You had,
it's like he kind
Bill
of
Russell won, I think 9 or 11. You know,
with him never losing one, it that's kind of the thing separates him because
I think so.
LeBron can win 6, but he lost 4.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
or whatever it's going to be by the end of his career. I'm sure
yeah,
it's going to be very,
more,
very high.
It's more than zero.
Yeah,
it's more than zero. But things like that and. For him being, you know, Penguin Publishing and Tristan and I right now, we're currently going through, you know, reaching out to publishers and we're learning that process and it's a grind. And I love hearing him. He put all the post-its up on his walls and then he ended up having to take them all down and
yeah.
He had ended up self-publishing. And that's just, that goes to show you, nobody gets to, we bring this up all the time and that, you know, I'm hammering this point home all the time because I feel it's a very important point, guys, listening at home. That nobody gets to where they are. Nobody gets to this level of achievement without struggle. Nobody is given anything. There's yeah. no spoon in anyone's mouth. It's not by accident. It's by overcoming adversity, persevering, and surrounding yourself by the right people.
I think simplicity and working hard is just, you know, it sounds so simple, but it's the catalyst.
Breaking things down.
Patience is huge, you know what I mean? People think it's just an overnight thing, but it's not. It's grind, like, I'm sure that we'll speak about it a little bit more as we go on, but you know, there's times when you know we've had to do 3 a.m. interviews. There's times when you have to cut some things off at work to make sure that you know where your priorities lie.
You know what? And we're kind of evolving from that.
Yeah, there's times when you can't go out drinking late at night, and there's times that you can't go partying when you want to go partying, but you've made the sacrifice because you've got your goals, and there's just little things like that, and you just got to decide what you want. So if you want success. You're going to have to grind and you're going to have to put some hard yards in and sacrifice a shitload of things, but you just got to decide what you want.
Yeah, and you have to write those things down and tell people about them. You have to make them clear. You can't live in this wishy-washy world of, oh, I'm flirting with the idea of maybe making a change or I kind of want to do this. The only way to get there is you have to fully commit. You have to identify your plan. You have to create a plan of attack, and you have to have faith that you're it's coming out of you, exuding from a good place.
Absolutely, and I think you make some good points. Seeing that it is the week before the end of the year, it's like probably a great time. Take your pen and paper out for 20 minutes and just figure out what you want for the new year. You know what I mean? Like it's a great time to do it.
I'm glad you brought that up. So I actually just this past Sunday went to the newspaper agent, bought about 5 magazines. What I'm into. So, guys, we never really talked about it, so I'll take you through step by step real quick. I'll be brief. Here's how I make vision boards. I make one once a year. I make one about the week before New Year's every year, and what I do is I take a cardboard. Basically, if you're in, like, eighth grade and you're doing, like, a science project, that type of, like, white cardboard. And then I'll go to the magazine store and find, like, 5 magazines I'm interested in. Fighting magazine, a travel, photography, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then I'll go through the magazines and just tear pages out of things that speak to me for that next coming year. If it's a picture of a Hawaii or a map, put the map on there because you want to travel. If it's a picture of a guy climbing a mountain and you want to do an event, put that up there.
Yeah.
For me, it's going to be a little bit more specific with my goals and my brand and my family and my business. So once I figure that sort of thing.
That's cool.
And what it does is then once you do it, I put it right on my wall. Right in my bedroom, and I see it every day, and things just tick off. I've been doing the vision boards for about 4 years now, and this is no lie. My first vision board I ever did, I was living in Vegas, and I didn't even have a passport at the time. So on that vision board was a passport.
Wow.
So, like, to travel. And now I'm living in Australia and doing this. It's amazing. You know.
I think that's brilliant.
I'm a big believer of
it. You know, Johnny's just offered some things that you can pretty much put to use straight away, you know. Johnny's obviously done it a few times, so it's a lot easier for him to do that. But he's given you some good steps that you can start today. It might not even have to start with magazines. It might just be starting with maybe they're drawing themselves.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You can do whatever you want. There are no rules. But the big point of the rule, the one rule,
is to get it down on
to
paper,
get it down on paper and like have
you can
a visual.
See it as well.
Yeah, for sure. To have like a visual, and I think also I'd like to see a study on this. I think the action of doing it and then seeing it and then having it there creates accountability. And
it
then
does.
You know, that sort of. There's a lot of these subconscious things that we do that we don't realize that have a huge effect on what turns out to be our day.
Yeah, I agree.
Day in and day out. And I feel, think about your day by day thing, Tristan. You know, you wake up, you eat healthy, you train, you help people, and a lot of these things are easy to do now because you do them over and over, but they have an overlying effect on, you know, what your life looks like over time.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee if those things, if you were waking up drinking or waking up smoking weed or hanging out with the wrong people, waking up at 2 p.m., you wouldn't be hosting a show called the Vision Board Podcast talking to Jake Ducey's of the world, Gary Vaynerchuk, Evander Holyfield, Joe DeFranco. You definitely wouldn't be doing that.
Well, because I guess we both kind of made, you know, that rule that we'll give up a lot of things this year because, you know, in my belief, it's like you surround yourself with good people. You speak to – it's like a mentoring session for 45 minutes. And, like, I'm open to learn. So it doesn't matter if it's someone like Jake who's only 25.
Yep.
Or someone that's Gary who's over 40. Someone that's Evander that's 50. Or it doesn't matter what age they are, what experience they are.
Steve Maxwell.
I think there's something that you can learn from everyone.
Yes. It's huge. And, you know, it's just a sign of growth. It's a maturation process. When you get to a point where you could realize that you don't know everything, where you have room for growth – you have reached a state, my friend, of, you know, definitely a maturing process.
People are good at different things, you know what I mean? No one's good at everything. So, and when you think about it, we're all human beings, so we must have something to contribute. Most people do have something good to contribute, you know what I mean? So it's always good to be open to listen. Like, I think I'm a better listener than I am a speaker. And, you know, I'm always kind of I'm at that sort of school that, you know, you listen more than you learn more when you listen. So,
yep. Rule number one of leadership.
Then you can share it with other people. So I think that's just kind of my approach to things.
Yeah, life is exciting, man. Like, I don't mean to be cheesy. I am the cheesy and corny one, but it is, because when you have the framework of knowing that you have the opportunity to wake up each day to learn, and then what you could learn there, then you could apply to what you're passionate about. And then if you could then do that and then help other people with it.
Yeah, that's huge.
Oh, my God. Like, what? That's what fires me up, man.
Why hold it inside? All right, Johnny, another great episode. Before we leave, guys, just remember, if you could please just share it with your friends, your family members, and remember to subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And on iTunes, if you could leave us a 5-star review, that's just doing even more for us because we get more visualized on iTunes and things like that. So people find us more naturally, and then we go up the charts, and it just really helps us.
It increases our reach. Also, go to our website, thevisionboardpodcast.com. Sign up for our newsletter. It takes 5 seconds. And one last thing, Facebook, The Vision Board Podcast, please like and share our page. We'd love it.
Awesome, guys. So like we always say, get in touch. Let us know what we're doing good and what we're doing shit. Obviously, we've had no shit ones, so obviously we're doing something right.
Yeah, be real with us, though. We could always improve.
Definitely. Guys, we'll speak to you again before the end of the year. But you guys rock on and you have a great week.
Yeah, man, that was awesome, Tristan. Jake Ducey, appreciate you.
Jake, my man.
Peace.
See you, guys.
Welcome to The Vision Board Podcast. Stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are 2 for 2.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.